Okay, well, there's nobody here to tell me I can't start, so we're gonna go ahead and get started.
You can't start.
No, it's too late, you had your chance. Try to stop me now. My name is James A. Willis, and I want to welcome you all to my strange and spooky world. I see some familiar faces. Welcome back. I told you my world was very addicting, but you didn't listen. I also see some new faces, which is killer, because that means I get to freak you all out for the very first time. But before I begin and we journey into my strange and spooky world, I have to thank each and every one of you guys, because you guys are hardcore. I mean, you guys have been in this room the entire day. You're making me very nervous that I have to like live up to your expectations. I'll just start by saying, the dudes walking around with the AK-47s in the parking lot, they got nothing on you guys. So I appreciate you guys hanging in there. For those of you who don't know me, I'll tell you a little bit about myself very quickly. I am the founder and director of an organization called The Ghosts of Ohio. I started that in 1999. We've been going strong ever since. We have got a booth that is in the, I think it's officially known as the back alley in the other room. If you haven't seen us yet, please come back there. We got a little cooler out and some chairs. It's very, very family friendly, sort of. It's very nice. But as I said, we've got about 30 members throughout the entire state. I actually have been chasing after ghosts, monsters, visiting crybaby rages, all sorts of things, for roughly about almost 25 years. I grew up in upstate New York, so I blame my parents for taking me to go see the Headless Horseman. So, but along the way, I also hooked up with Mark Moran and Mark Schuerman and became part of the Grand Order of Weird Writers, which is about 15 of us that they fan out across the United States looking for all sorts of strange and bizarre things, and actually get paid to do that. So it's the coolest job ever. Question that people always ask me is, how did I, you know, what got me into this? And I'll be really, really honest with you. It all goes back to being a small child and just having this sense of awe and wonderment that there could be this world outside that we don't know about. And so, well, I'm going to give it first my shameless plug here that we are actually selling these t-shirts. I see people who see dead people, which I think is quite appropriate. And then I've seen the ghosts of Ohio. But I would like to say that it was, if I can get a little sappy, just a wee bit, and then we'll get into the weird stuff, is that today I actually saw that same sense of wonderment and awe from this little guy right here. So this is for you.
Cool.
The future strange and spooky guy, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you about some of my strange and spooky travels across the United States. We're going to focus a lot on what I encountered in Weird Ohio. We'll talk a bit about the ghosts of Ohio since this is a Ohio convention. But we'll get some weird stuff along the way. And if you hang in with me long enough, there's a special video at the very end of this that I never want to put me here, but everybody who's seen the presentation says you have to put it in there because it brings the house down. Not, I don't think literally. I don't know. I've seen some strange things in the ceiling, so it could be literally, but we'll see what happens here. But as I was traveling around researching Weird Ohio, I discovered something, that Ohio is a weird state. You waited all afternoon for me to tell you that, and you already knew that. See? Do you feel ripped off? Well, in case, we'll go a little deeper here. The cool thing about Ohio is we were weird before it was cool to be weird. Case in point, many people think that they are looking at Ohio's state flag. You're wrong! You're looking at Ohio State Burgee. It's got a little triangle cut out of the end. I always look around and see if there's a flag nearby. Of course, there's not. Go check out the flag, though. You'll see we are the only flag that's got the little pennant because it's got the triangle, so it's not a flag. How cool is that? That when it came to getting a state flag, we were like, nah, heck with that. We don't want a flag. We're getting a burgee. We're going to be different. So we were weird from the beginning. We're going to talk about some strange and spooky cemeteries. Most of these, I'll let you know when you can't visit the places that we're talking about here. For the most part, you can. Swing by the booth, grab a business card, shoot me an email, I'll give you directions. You'll see as we go through here, though, one of the main reasons why I like to show these because people are always like, no, that can't be true. That can't exist. But we'll start, jump right in with the Bloody Horseshoe Grave. You know this is going to be a cool story. I'll let you know when we get into Sketchyville. I'll say, according to legend, I'll even do this so we can know we're moving into the legend part. But We're going to get back to this in a little bit, but this is Otterbein Cemetery, which is in Somerset, Ohio. Story, it'll take a little while to get there, but trust me, it'll be cool when we get there. Back in the day, a man by the name of James Henry was having a bit of trouble. Couldn't decide if he wanted to marry a woman by the name of Mary, or if he wanted to marry Rachel. He couldn't decide. What he decided to do was, I guess you did this back in the day, he decided he was going to let his horse, Bob, decide who he was going to marry. So what he did is he climbed on the horse, smacked Bob in the rump and said, giddy up. And he said to himself that whosoever house it stopped at, that's the one he was going to marry. I guess thankfully for most of the people involved in the story, it stopped at Mary's house. He immediately got down on his knees. He asked if she would marry him. She accepted. And on their wedding day, she got Bob the horse as a wedding gift. Now, sadly, a short period of time passed, and then Mary became very ill, and she passed away. In a stroke of utter stupidity, James wasted no time, and he turned around and he asked Rachel to marry him. Accepted. And on their wedding day, she got Bob the horse as a wedding gift. Now, some people say that that didn't sit very well with Bob the horse. Some people say that it didn't sit very well with Mary's ghost. Because shortly after Rachel was married to him, she got up one morning and could not find her husband, went looking for him everywhere, and eventually found him lying on the floor dead in the barn with the imprint of a bloody horseshoe smack dab in the middle of his forehead. The only other living creature in the barn was Bob the horse. Now, according to legend, you always have to say it in that voice too, because it makes you sound really creepy. I should get a flashlight to say it next time, according to legend. But according to legend, right around the same time that they found his dead body, out in Otterbein Cemetery, on the back of Mary's tombstone, very faintly at first, but then growing darker and darker over time, was the outline of a bloody horseshoe. And no matter how hard you scrubbed, it would always keep coming back. This is Mary's headstone. It's seen better days, obviously. It's now surrounded by a small metal fence. That's the front. But indeed, if you walk around to the back, you will find something that looks a bit like a bloody horseshoe. It's interesting because people point out and they say, you know, is that where they could have nailed a horseshoe to it? It's actually a pockmark, so they're really not that deep. The Columbus Mental Asylum Cemetery. This cemetery is home to, it was two at one point, now it's only one, tombstones that were pretty much identical, and they freak me out every time I see it, which takes a lot to freak me out. It's also strange because there is only a single word on the tombstone, and yet it still freaks me out. A little bit of background about asylum cemeteries, especially ones that were put up right around the time as the Columbus one was. It was considered a stigma in those days to actually have, I have no idea how I ended up back here, to be honest with you. I put the monster down. Another 5 minutes, I'd be out in the lobby. Yeah, where did everybody go? It was considered a stigma back in the day to have a family member in an asylum. And so for that reason, if you go to asylum cemeteries, a lot of times you won't find names, you'll just find numbers, which is actually quite sad to see row after row of just numbers. But it's not a number on this tombstone that freaks me out. They said it's a single word, and that word is specimens. Oh. Yeah, think about that on your ride home. Yeah. It was clearly alive at one point, but it makes you wonder. The best explanation that somebody gave me is that they were actually bits and pieces of cadavers that they had done experiments on, and those sort of things. But yeah, something to think of tonight as you're lying there in bed. The Merchant Ball. You've got to check this out because it is actually the world famous ball. We won't go any bluer than that, we'll say. It is in Marion Cemetery. And what you're looking at is this is the Merchant family plot, the giant ball in the center there. And then these around in a circle are the individual graves of the Merchant family. The one we're concerned with is this big old guy in the middle here because it moves. Notice I didn't do my tattoo according to legend. It does move. How do we know that it moves? Well, there you are looking at it. It is 4,500 pounds, solid, polished granite. We know that it moves because of this spot This is the part that should be attached to the base. No matter how many times they reattach it, it starts to turn. As I said, there is no according to legend. It does indeed turn. They have reset it numerous times. It's been featured twice with Ripley's Believe It or Not, once on the little pulp magazine that they put out, and then also on the television show. It does move. Now, before you go racing for your cars and go driving up to Marion to go and see this thing wildly around, hopefully you were one of the people that won the free pizza. Take that coupon with you because you're going to be there for a while. They recently updated how fast this moves. It moves roughly 2 inches a year. So you'll be there a while, but it does move. Spring Grove Cemetery, love this cemetery. It's down in the Cincinnati area. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous cemetery, and it's a fine example of the notion, if I can't take it with me, I'm gonna spend it all on where I'm gonna be buried. Gorgeous mausoleums that have multiple levels. I mean, gorgeous. If you go, you need to go to lot number 100, where you will find the grave of Mr. Brewer. Very strange story surrounding Mr. Brewer. It is said that as he was nearing the end of his life and he was very ill, that he was kind of hurrying to get all of his affairs in order. And for the most part, most people believed that by the time he passed, he was done. According to legend, he wasn't quite done. And they discovered he wasn't quite done when they read his will. And noticed that there was a line in the will that said that he wanted his eyes scooped out of his head and jammed into his bust. You weren't quite following that. There's supposed to be human eyes in that statue. Okay. I can't make this stuff up. We'll go in for a closer look here. They do appear to be human-like eyes. They also appear to be a version of like a tacky Elvis on velvet. You know, whichever way you move, they do seem to be following you. Strange and spooky buildings. The Longaberger Basket headquarters. This has become something that many, many people here in Ohio have said is almost scandalous. Because how dare Weird Ohio place this on the cover of their book? There's nothing weird about that. Giant building shaped like a basket that people work in. There's nothing weird about that. That's why it's on the cover, people. For those of you not familiar with Longaberger baskets, I will say, and I think many people, mostly male, most in secret, will agree that Longaberger baskets are weird. I don't understand the need to spend $250 on a butter basket and then get a little liner for $50. I don't understand that. So this to me is really, really weird. If you're not familiar with this building, this is their headquarters, and people do indeed work in there. My favorite part is, this is the smoking area. You can barely make out the little people. Personally, I don't think you should be allowed to smoke that close to a giant wicker type basket, but that's just me. Interesting side note about this is that right when the building was almost completed, they stopped for a moment and they said, it gets kind of cold in Ohio. You know, it's going to be really, really bad if ice forms on here and then the ice breaks off, because what you can't see is the roof of the building is solid glass. It's a glass atrium. So they went back and spent several million dollars. As far as I know, this is the only building in the world where they paid several million dollars to heat the handles. I am also looking for the gentleman who did do this. Not according to legend, he did. He's almost impossible to track down, which will become apparent in a minute, because a guy actually took his private plane and flew through the handles. There are many other people who are looking for him too, aside from the crazy weird Ohio guy. So it might take a while to find him, but. This is a bit of video that we took from a private investigation with the Ghosts of Ohio. This is interesting because even though you're looking at video, you're going to hear a little clip of audio. When I play it, you're going to hear a sound. Actually, it's a series of distinct sounds that are very, very unique. I'm going to play it twice for the sake of time. When you hear it the first time, just think to yourself what you think it sounds like. Notice I'm not telling you what it sounds like. Because I know as soon as I say, listen, you're going to hear a car backfire. You won't, but If I say that, you immediately are thinking, okay, listen for the car, listen for the car. So I've already planted the seed here, what you're supposed to listen for. But that being said, you are going to hear a very distinct series of noise. After I play it the first time, I will tell you what most people hear when we play it and see if that's what you hear. What you are actually looking at is a piano. I'm gonna try this. A piano that was actually kept out in the barn. We were called out because the piano would actually play like a single note from time to time. Down in the basement or the bottom of the barn, there was a series of wooden troughs sort of things or containers that the lids would go up and you couldn't force them down. It was like something was holding them. So we set up our infrared cameras and kind of locked it off. But it's interesting that you will, as I said, hear these very distinct noises. I will caution you that you are going to hear what sounds like children yelling and screaming in the background. They're not, you know, Keith's not here, but they're not the children of the grave. They're actually the neighbors that are really, really far away, enjoying what the official term in Ohio is, I believe, hootenanny. So you will hear voices yelling in the background. Don't pay attention to that. You will hear some very distinct noises that are clearly coming from inside of the barn. So we'll give this a shot. We'll see the video here. Do it one more time before I tell you what most people hear. And I'll play it, but I will tell you that most people, when they hear that, hear the sound of pool balls being hit together.
Yeah. And it sounds like a radio.
Yeah. It was a hootenanny inside the barn. Mm-hmm. The sad thing is that after we had heard that, we went back, and to their knowledge, they had never had a pool table out there. But as I said, it was interesting that everybody who hears that hears a very distinct noise that's taking place there.
Where'd that piano come from?
I'm not sure where they actually, it was kind of, Wendy, wasn't it that they were kind of like selling things back and forth, like antiques.
So, eBay.
Yeah. Yeah, they were selling it on the eBay. So it wasn't something that actually came with the house. They just kind of brought it in. The wall of gum, to shift gears just to one of my favorite places. So I get a call from Mark Moran, and he said, can you go out to Greenville to check out the wall of gum? I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? So I said, what is it? And he said that it is the Made Right Sandwich Shop, famous for their loose meat sandwiches. Yum, yum, eat them up. Loose meat sandwiches, just to, by the way, just think sloppy Joe without the sauce. Basically meat. But he said, they say that when you go out there, you're going to find this wall that people have put gum on. Okay. So as I'm driving out there, we're thinking we're going to find something along the lines of what you would find at like a drive-through bank or like a, you know, an amusement park where you see a couple of pieces of gum that, you know, kids have just stuck on the wall. That's what we thought we were going to find. The bad news is we didn't find that. We found a building of gum. Every side of this building, did I mention it was up to 7 feet off the ground, was covered in wads and wads of gum. And as I sat there dumbfounded, I watched all of these people walking in. And like this bizarre rite of passage, they'd be walking up like chipmunks, like storing it up like for the winter, and they would just grab their wad and like slap it on there and then go in. And children were going up and like stretching their gum out and putting their initials on the wall. And then there was even this one I thought was totally cool. It blew a big bubble and then kind of like pinched it off in their mouth and stuck the bubble up on there. So it was just like, this is crazy. So I walked in thinking, this is a restaurant. How did it get to this point? There's no way that they can condone this type of behavior. Not only do they, but after you're done with your loose meat sandwiches, you can purchase your very own wall of gum t-shirt. Which, you come up and feel it. It's actually got little raised wads of gum. I'm used to wear this for presentations. And then I discovered there's something called good touch and bad touch. So I don't put this on for presentations. I will lay it over the chair here and have at it, people. Touch to your heart's content. The brick outhouse is one of my favorite things because it's just bizarre. It must have been a very, 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 very slow year in Ohio history. But we can all be proud that up in northern Ohio, and Ohio in general, that we are home to the one and only, we'll keep this G-rated, brick outhouse listed on the National Register of Historic Places. There is, it's actually behind a school now, it's just sitting off there. They do have a little plaque there. They don't tell you what the building is, maybe for obvious reasons. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a very nice outhouse. It was actually designed to be a 12-seater, 12 for the boys and 12 for the girls. Six for the boys, six for the girls. It's certainly nicer than the two-story outhouse I found working on Weird Indiana. Bad for a while. Yeah. Not according to the legend, that does exist as well. There was always the opening at the bottom, though. I'm not sure why, but you know, the top one was always full. The Fairport Harbor Lighthouse. This is a great, great story that has been told for many, many years. And the story was that the lighthouse keeper, he had a wife, and the wife became very, very, it's actually interesting to see if you were up in the wee hours of last night or this morning, depending how you look at it. Travel Channel actually reran a version of this. But the lighthouse keeper's wife was bedridden. She was very, very sick. And so the lighthouse keeper, to keep her company, she loved cats. So we all know nothing makes a woman happier than to throw a whole mess of cats at her. So give her a whole mess of cats. Her favorite cat was this big, fat, juicy gray cat. That was the one that always stayed with her, and no matter when the other ones ran around looking, I don't know, out to sea to catch their dinner, I don't know. But the big, fat, juicy gray one always hung around her until the day she died. All the other cats stayed around. Big, fat, juicy gray one disappeared. That started the story that, according to legend, up until the present day, people started seeing the ghost of this big, fat, juicy gray cat roaming around inside of the lighthouse keeper's house. Most people thought that that should fall into the according to legend category, and indeed it still can, but something interesting happened, I think it was roughly about 8 years ago. They were kind of doing renovations to the lighthouse keeper's house. And they were, one of the things they were doing was they were putting in air conditioning ducts. So a worker went down into the crawl space down in the basement. He was basically laying on his back, kind of shimmying along. And he said that he was starting to work on one of the ducts, putting it in. And then he got this weird feeling like he was being watched. So he turned his head, shined his light over there, and found that he was staring directly into the face of a mummified cat. It was not professionally mummified. It was just the elements had kind of taken its thing, it's had its way with it. So what they did after they dragged it out is they decided they would put it on display. That's what you did, I guess. Interestingly enough, about 4 years ago, it disappeared. The story was that it had been stolen, it had been taken away. I'm happy to report that a year and a half ago, it was found safe, secure, and under glass in the mayor's office of Fairport Harbor. That's even stranger and spookier than we're going to go into today. But it has since been returned to the lighthouse. You can actually see it. It's twisted and creepy, but it's also remarkable that it is, I mean, it's very, very well preserved. So it's a little creepy. Denison Train Depot Museum. I had never heard of this building until about a year or so ago when they contacted the Ghosts of Ohio to come up and do an investigation. They were having all sorts of strange things that were going on inside of the museum. This is a picture taken a few years back. I cannot recommend going to this museum enough. Ghosts aside, it is the most remarkable museum. Of course, tell them Ghosts of Ohio sent you, but amazing museum. They restore old train cars, and then what they do is they put them out on the tracks that aren't used anymore, and they line them up. So you literally go back through history by walking through the different train cars. The hospital car that they have allegedly has a ghost or two in there.
And they also got some strange things that are going on in the baggage claim area. My favorite is, this clearly isn't period, but it's just me. You certainly have, if you're looking at it from a ghost aspect, many, many elements in here that could result in a haunting. This area was where unclaimed caskets were stored until the bodies were found. They didn't tell us what happened if the bodies were never, ever claimed. But they also have artifacts from all over the place in there. I'm going to play a rather interesting clip for you now. I'll play the one clip, and then I'll play the kind of the edited down clip for the sake of time. I'm not actually jinxing it too, but I will tell you what we hear. The reason I'm not jinxing it is because this is probably one of the most controversial EVPs, if you will, or electronic voice phenomena that we've ever gotten, because it is so clear. Most of the ones just sound like, blah, blah, and then you kind of make up things and say, oh, wow, that was Uncle Steven, because, you know, he got into the sauce and then would mumble a lot. So that's clearly him. He's reaching out from beyond the grave. This is extremely, extremely clear, which is why I said it makes it rather controversial. The cool thing about the Ghosts of Ohio is I created the group to run the gamut from total believers to total skeptics. The reason I did that is because we all come together in the middle and we fight, which is totally cool to actually just sit there. Because at the end of the day, if we can walk away with something and say, I don't know, that's good enough for us. Because ghosts are unknown. So we can walk away with an unknown, like with this, works for us. What happened, what you're actually looking at is this is sort of a ramp that you go up this way, swing around, and then you board the trains this way. So it's kind of like a little old-fashioned newsstand there, and here is kind of where they have like the USO women set up, because back in the day they used to give sandwiches as the military guys were getting on. Now what happened is earlier in the evening, we had, and she is actually here, she's hiding over there, Miss Wendy, but she was actually up here with all women. And they were taking readings, and they were getting high EMF levels, kind of tracking all around in this area. What we normally do with the Ghosts of Ohio is that if we get any weird readings, if it's temperature, EMFs, if it's just something that's weird, we'll send another group in, and we'll mix it up as much as possible to see if we're still getting those readings. Or 9 times out of 10, we're looking at electrical, or, you know, a natural cause. What I did is sent another group of all men up into this area. And they had their digital voice recorder and they had EMFs, and they're walking around in this area. Now the clip that I'm going to play is the two of them complaining back and forth because they can't get the reading. So at first, they're whining because they're like, I don't know where Wendy was. Maybe she was over here. Maybe she was here. And the two of them are just bantering back and forth as to how, you know, they're trying to find it, but they can't. As the clip goes, and as I said, where this clip begins is they're basically saying, I don't know why we can't get that reading. At the very end of the clip, you will hear a voice whisper, you don't deserve it. So as I said, I'll play the first clip, which is them. You'll hear two voices that are clearly the two of them. It's Eric and Neil going back and forth. And then at the end of it, you'll hear, don't deserve it.
You fall on it now.
I'll do a little guy over here for the sake of time. This is it by itself. Strange and spooky roadside oddities. This is what gave birth to the whole weird series. And you've all done this before, whether or not you've realized it. You're driving down the road and you see something and you're like, what the heck? That's weird. I'm the guy who does the U-turn and goes back and takes pictures and digs deep in it. So these are stuff that you'll see as you're driving down the road. The Dublin corn cobs, has anybody heard of these? This ties in to the whole idea, kind of the theme of this, that there's nothing but corn here in Ohio. Well, there's corn and then there's giant 6-foot tall concrete corn cobs as well. So I think they're giving us a short end of the straw here. This is actually in Dublin, 109 concrete corn cobs in rows, just sitting out in the field. People of Dublin asked for this to be made, and they got this. And most people say it's just art. But since you guys hung in here with me the whole time, I'm going to give you the twisted story behind this. The artist who was hired to do this knew what he was doing. He was asked to create a memorial to the Dublin farmer. He went and did his research and found that when Dublin, the town slash city, came in, the Dublin farmer was killed off. Mm. So he designed this as a literal memorial to the death of the Dublin farmer. The reason they are concrete and they are in rows is because you are supposed to stand across the street and then you will see that it's designed to look like Arlington National Cemetery. So next time you're driving past these and you see the wee kitties dancing around in them, they're dancing what's supposed to represent a cemetery. The boy with the boot, I put this in every presentation I do because I need help. I need severe help with this. I need to be able to sleep at night and have this thing stop haunting my dreams. He was not supposed to be in Weird Ohio, but anytime we were up near the Sandusky area, people would find out what I was doing and they would say, are you gonna put the boy with the boot in Weird Ohio? And I would say, I don't know, what's the story with the, oh, you gotta get the boy with the boot. And then everywhere I went, they kept saying that. Is the boy with the boot in there? Is the boy with the boot? And after a while, I bought into it. So I'm like, oh boy, and I put it on my calendar and it's like, oh, in a week and a half, I'm gonna go see the boy with the boot, see the boy with the boot. And I didn't know why, but I was just totally excited. I gotta go see it. And it's up in Sandusky, it's right in town square, you can't miss it. So it's finally there, the day arrives, and I go pulling up in front of it, and I encounter the Loveland Frog. I encounter the boy with the boot. Now that's all I have. I don't know what this represents. I don't know the meaning behind it. It's clearly his boot. He's either proud of his boot or the fact that there's water leaking out. Maybe he thinks there's shoddy craftsmanship involved. I'm not really sure. No one can tell me the meaning behind the boy with the boot. I need help. Because I've also heard that, according to legend, there's a guy up in Sandusky who makes lawn ornaments. He makes little miniature versions of boy with the boot statues, and I want one, but I don't know why. So somebody gotta help me and find out what the deal is with. I mean, whenever you talk to people in Sandusky and you're like, what's the story behind this? And they're like, it's a boy with a boot. And I'm like, well, yes, we've established that, but what's the story? It's a boy with a boot. So I need help. So if anybody knows somebody who knows the story, just help me out. We'll hook you up with some free swag or something.
Maybe he just took it off to play in the water.
It's possible. The Loveland Frog, I always, yes. You gonna tell me about the boy with the boot?
No, I was just had something to add. Have you ever tried to see if there was a boot factory nearby? I mean, close.
Yes, there is no boot factory. There never was a boot factory. To make things even more twisted, there's supposed to be other boy with the boot statues lurking around Ohio. There's supposed to be one in Cincinnati inside of an old hospital. They're supposed to be scattered across. And some people have told me that is the copy of the boy with the boot, that the original is actually in the town hall of Sandusky. I haven't verified that. But again, it's I don't get it. The Loveland Frog I put in here because it is something near and dear to my heart, because whenever you look and talk about like monsters in Ohio, oddly enough, Bigfoot is always at the top, as some speakers will tell you, because we rank way up there in terms of Bigfoot sightings. We've also got our version of the Loch Ness Monster. We have Bessie, who hangs around like Lake Erie. But many people forget about the Loveland Frog, which is why he's my favorite. He is a lowly frog that is often forgotten. And it's a twisted story. The story is that on two separate occasions in the early 1970s, people outside of Loveland, Ohio, were driving down the road in the middle of the night. I'd like to say it was a dark, stormy night, but it wasn't. It was just an ordinary evening where they encountered something. The first instance, a person came up. It was a man all by himself in a car. He stopped because there was something laying in the middle of the road, which he originally took to be a very, very large dog or a deer that had been hit. He got out of the car, went to see if he could drag it out of the road, and it stood up. It looked at him quite menacingly, then jumped over the guardrail and disappeared into the Little Miami River. What he said it looked like was this. That's creepy, people! Look at that! Personally, I don't get a frog from that, you know, but, you know, far be it from me.
It's like a squirrel with a tail.
Yeah, they reported that it was between 4 and 5 foot tall. I'm moving if something comes leaping out that looks like that. But
About a week and a half later, same general area.
Another person reported seeing the same thing. Here's where it gets a little weird. Both people who reported seeing it were police officers. The second one actually shot at it. It hasn't been seen since, so maybe he got it, or maybe he was just waiting for some other people to hear a presentation and go driving down through Loveland late at night. Gretchen's Lock. Gretchen's Lock is in Beaver Creek. No, not here. The other Beaver Creek that's way up where you're almost cutting into the border with Pennsylvania. This is a really, really cool story. And we'll get to the according to the legend. But there's a lot of actual fact that go in. This is very documented. And back when the lock system was being built, the system of waterways in northern Ohio, northeast, a man by the name of Gill came over from Europe to help with the building of the locks. And he brought with him his wife and his almost teenage daughter, Gretchen. Now, on the way over, the wife became very, very sick, and she died. And she had to be buried at sea. And when they got to Ohio and he started building the lock system, the daughter, Gretchen, was still overcome with grief. She stopped eating, she stopped drinking, she pretty much stopped doing much of anything, except she would wander around the area where the locks were being built, and anybody that she encountered, she would come up to and say, "Help me, I want my mother." Unfortunately, because Gretchen was not taking very good care of herself, she too got sick, and then she died. Now, the father slash husband knew that when he finished building the locks, he was going back to Europe. So the fact that he had already lost his wife and his daughter, he didn't want to leave the daughter behind. So he did something a little weird, but we can also understand the reason why he did it, is he didn't want to leave Gretchen behind. So after Gretchen's funeral, he took the casket and he placed it inside of the lock that he was building, which is why it's now known as Gretchen's Lock. After the construction was done, he pulled the casket out, put it on a boat, and they set sail back to Europe. And the ship was lost at sea, and the bodies were never recovered. Now, according to legend, if you find your way out to Gretchen's Lock, you just have to be there at the right time. You don't have to go at midnight on Halloween, you can go in broad daylight. But if you're there at the right time, you are supposed to encounter the ghost of Gretchen, who will come up to you and say, "Help me. I want my mother." This is the path out to Gretchen's Lock. Several miles through this. The day that we went out, it was myself, my then girlfriend Stephanie, and another couple. It was a freezing cold Sunday in January. You can see there was snow on the ground. The water is right along here. We got there, as I said, we were walking several miles back. It's the only way in, the only way out. I had actually taken an old map of the area and overlaid it over a new map. And we were wandering through the woods, and I'm muttering to myself, "Please let it be out here, please let it be out here." Because I had a deadline. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been caught dead out there. It was freezing. We did find it, though. You know, there was actually a little plaque out there that told the story of the family and him coming over and then going back. When we went out there, there was nobody parked alongside the road where we parked. We didn't see anybody, we didn't hear anybody, because it was freezing cold and nobody in their right mind would be caught out there. Now, we took a few pictures, stayed out there for about 15 minutes, and then started walking back out, same way we had gone in. Again, didn't hear anybody, didn't see anybody, we got back to the car, they went over the cars there. There was one difference though. On the way out, we saw something that wasn't there on the way in. What we found, written in the snow in letters about this high, was, "Help me, I want my mother."
Wow.
There's actually a close-up of my mother. The only footprints were ours going out. The letters were about that high. Now, can I sit here and tell you that a ghost wrote that? No, I can't. I have absolutely no evidence to support that. I can tell you there was no way that was there when we went out. Now, could somebody have walked roughly a mile and a half back into the woods, hoping somebody was back there to scare, wrote that, and then ran away giggling? Sure. It seems kind of far to go for a practical joke, but sure, it is possible. But I can't tell you a ghost did that. I can tell you that the story that I just told you is one of the main reasons that my then-girlfriend Stephanie is sitting in that back corner as my lovely wife Stephanie.
Because when we came across this, Stephanie did the same exact thing I did. This is cool, and started taking pictures. Now the other couple, we don't see them very much anymore. They basically looked at us and were like, we did not sign up for this, and they ran away. They left us. To protect the guilty, I don't show the picture of them going down the path and then locking themselves in a car in broad daylight because of something written in the snow. So the advice I always give everybody, if you're single and you're out doing something spooky and something spooky happens, take a look around, you never know who might be around. Could be the Marian kind. Naked Leg Sundial. This is actually in Indiana for part of the Weird Indiana book that I wrote. I'm going to show you guys this because it's going to be very hard for you guys to see it for yourself, which will become apparent in a few moments, although you're still willing to try if you'd like to go. Have at it. I also like to tell this story because my dear friend and colleague in the University of Ohio, Mark, is here, and if you really want to embarrass him, just ask him to recount the tale that I'm going to tell you now. So Mark and Mark Moran, and one of the things they wanted me to look into was the story that there is a giant naked leg sundial up in Roselawn, Indiana. Okay, do you know anything more about it? And they said, yeah, it's supposed to be in a nudist camp. I will tell you that the visions now that you're getting about what people look like and the type of people that go to nudist camps, those are not the people that actually go there. So I get out the Yellow Pages and I look up nudist camp colonies in the Yellow Pages, and they are listed. So I call them up and say, hello, trying to sound very professional. Hello, this is James A. Willis, and I'm writing a story up in Weird Indiana, and I would like to have your Naked Leg Sundial featured prominently in its pages. There's a heavy sigh on the end of the phone, to which the guy says, that's the nudist camp across the street. So there's actually two. Keep that in mind. Go. The second one, I will just tell you, and then we will move on quickly, is family friendly. So we pull up, we've got two cars worth of people that are there with me, because the coolest thing is that all of my team members from the Ghosts of Ohio, I can't say enough about it, they've stuck through me, with me through thick and thin, through ghosts and muck and mire, and they wanted to go see Naked Leg Sundial. So we pull up and we start going down this dirt road and we start seeing all these warning signs, and we finally get to a big wooden fence that we clearly have to drive around, and there's all these warnings about no cameras or videos. So we all get out of the car and we're standing there and we kind of all steel ourselves and I'm like, okay, one last giggle and then we're going in now, we gotta be serious. So we steeled ourselves and we went around the corner and we entered what appeared to be like the land of like Sanford and Son or something. It was just like an old like junkyard type of thing, and it was something out of Hotel California. Because the building was made out of like reflective golden like glass. And you know, so we go walking in there, and as I walk in, a gentleman stands up. Thankfully, he had a very long shirt on, we'll say. And he stands up and he says, okay, yeah, the Naked Leg Sundial is out that way. So we go walking out there, and there she is. You can see that the Hotel California building back there. Now, Mark, had forgotten his camera and was using his camera phone. So we're all clicking away. When we were done, he had forgotten to save them all because he was so nervous. So he has no pictures of it. While this was going on, you're thinking to yourself, don't turn the camera. Because that's when we discovered that apparently when you go to these nudist type camps / colonies, the first thing that you do is you take all your clothes off, and then you go and you rent a golf cart. And you drive around really fast and let everything flap in the It's easy to get distracted by that. There was a gentleman over here that I just think was just looking for trouble, because he was actually grilling out. Go ahead, think about that for a little bit. He's grilling out. So we get the pictures and we go to leave. It's funny because people ask, well, was it really keeping time? I don't know. I took the pictures and then took my leave. And as we were leaving, I kept thinking, that really was like the Hotel California, except there was one major difference that we saw. Here, you can check out anytime you like, and you can leave, but you have to put your pants back on first.
Sun aura. So if you want to clean up afterwards, it's a good thing. If you're feeling a little dirty from the naked leg sundial, that Jesus is big in Ohio. Really, really, really big.
He lives right by it.
The best part about this is, according to legend, a gentleman by the name of Haywood Banks read about this in Weird Ohio and then did the hit song, which is available on YouTube, called Big Butter Jesus. I don't know if that's actually true, but I'll take credit for it. He is also known as the Touchdown Jesus, which is my personal favorite, the Cream Cheese Jesus. The thing that's funny is that he's clearly not to scale. I mean, if that was his cross, and I don't remember, I am, you know, what I would call a recovering Catholic, and I don't remember Jesus ever leaping out of the water, so I'm not really sure where he's coming from here, but my favorite part about all this is they interviewed, right when the book came out, they interviewed the church that actually created this, or had it created, to which they said, well, we're very honored that it's in Weird Ohio, but we don't think it's weird. That's why you're in the book. The Allen County Museum is in Lima, Ohio. I can't recommend checking out county museums in Ohio enough, because you get this bizarre collection of really historically cool things, and then a bunch of junk that people just donated because they were cleaning out their basement. They're the best places if you ever want to find weird things. If you go to the Allen County Museum, here's how you find a really twisted thing here. I'm angry because they don't even list this on their map. Even after it came out in Weird Ohio, they don't list it. But here's how you find it. You go down to the second floor. Here's where the New Yorker in me comes out. But you go up to the water fountain. It's the thing where refreshing clear liquid comes out, water. Get a refreshing drink and then just look up. You will be staring at this. This is a collection that two brothers put together. They were dentists, but back in the day they had to do double duty sometimes, so they were often called upon to do other things, including retrieving these from people's throats. This is a collection of items that were swallowed by people. It's not a horseshoe, it's actually a piece of rubber tubing. But if you look, and we've got, I think they closed the thing, we'll be around tomorrow, we have a close-up of this where you can see bits and pieces of broken dentures, there are nails, there's jacks, there's all sorts of bizarre things in here. What I love about this is two brothers just made this. I want it to be around their dinner table. How'd it go today? I got three buttons and a key. What'd you get? You know, I got a hunk of rubber hose and I got a piece of denture. Let's start a collection. And that's what they did. And when you look at it, they are all lovingly placed on individual pieces of paper. And they've got the patient's name and their age and area of the throat that they removed it from. It's just wonderful. So go down to the second floor. And as I said, the water fountain's right here. You just look up and you're staring right at it. Ohio's headless motorcycle ghost. I love this about Ohio. We are home to more headless motorcycle ghosts than any other state. We should be proud of that. We should have a t-shirt with that on it. The two that I'm going to tell you about, the one that seems to be known as the Elmore Rider, and he goes through Elmore, Ohio, hence the name Elmore Rider. Now the story is that he was coming down this path right here. There are different variations of the story, but that he was speeding down one night. He kind of got muddled up in the bridge right here, kind of went off the bridge, went through a barbed wire fence, came out the other side minus his head. And that if you go to the bridge on the anniversary of the death slash accident, which is supposed to be March 21st, you go to the end of the road, you flash your headlights three times, you were supposed to see a headlight running down towards you and then will disappear. There is a very famous story that was in numerous journals back in the late 60s about people going out and doing experiments out here and actually flashing their lights and it responded and came down the road at them. Personally, I'm here to tell you that if anybody tells you to do something a certain number of times and a ghost appears, it's not true. I wish it was true. It would make my job a lot easier. You know, I could just set up my equipment, flash my light three times, have a sandwich, and walk away with all cool ghost evidence. So anytime they tell you to do something three times, it's more than likely an urban legend. Things get a little weird, though, with my favorite headless motorcycle ghost. It's got nothing to do with the fact that my in-laws actually live in Oxford, Ohio, where the second one takes place. It's at Oxford Milford Road, Now the story here, pretty much the same basic story, except there's an interesting twist that brings in the idea why you have to flash your lights three times. The story here is that a gentleman on a motorcycle, who owned a motorcycle, was dating a girl who lived with her parents on Oxford Milford Road. They didn't like the boyfriend because he was a young ruffian who rode a motorcycle. And so what they would do, he actually lived right on Earhart Road, which is the road that kind of butts into that. What he would do is he would wait until she went to the front porch and flashed it three times. And that was the signal, come on over. And he'd hop on the motorcycle, drive down there and pick her up, and then they would go riding off to do all sorts of good deeds. The story is that one night he overslept. In some versions, he's actually intoxicated, and she's frantically flashing the light three times. When he finally gets it, he hops on there, he zooms over. There was a very steep turn that he doesn't make. He goes through it and again comes out minus the head. So they say that when you go to the spot, which is right roughly around here, you can see it's a very hilly road, and you flash your lights three times, that his ghost takes it as a sign, come on over and let's do charity work, and you will see the light coming towards you. I'm not sure why Stephanie actually agreed to marry me, because on one of our date nights, first time actually, I believe it was the first time, she might have to correct me, but one of the first times I met her parents in Oxford, I decided, you want to go see if we can find a headless motorcycle ghost? I think it could have been over right then, but she was like, sure. So we went out there, we parked, we did not flash our lights three times because it was one of those newfangled cars that you can't ever turn the headlights off with. It also always made me think that if you know, because when we used to turn flash headlights just for fun, it was always interesting because you pulled the place and you'd have the lights on and then it never failed. You would turn them off and then you would go, is that one? Or if I turn them back on, do I have to do the cycle before it counts as one? And I always imagine like a ghost going one, two. No, that's only two, I can't appear. So we went down there, we sat for a little bit and then didn't flash our lights, and we proceeded to drive this way. So we're driving along, and we're just talking, and all of a sudden, as we're starting to go along one of these hills, we look in the other lane, coming towards us, about that high off the ground, dead center in the road, is a white light, about that big, coming towards us. We then, on the hill. Stephanie was driving, I looked over at her and saw her looking ghastly white, and I said, you saw that, didn't you? And she said, yes, I did. At which point I figured the date was probably over, so start being the skeptic. So I said, as we're going up the hill here, I'm sure it's a car or something like that, and you know, we'll see it in a second. And as we got near the top of the hill, the last thing I said to her is, but you realize if we get to the top of the hill and there's nothing there, that's gonna be a little creepy. And we got to the top of the hill and there was nothing there. We went back and forth up and down that hill trying to see if a car could have turned off, if there was a way that a reflection or even a car headlight from one of the side roads, we couldn't ever recreate that. So there is something that's happening. You can actually go onto YouTube and see other people who have gotten the light that is bouncing along there. A real interesting side note, I don't tell this story very often, but this is just on a side note for this. Yeah?
I just wanted to add something that policemen have told me they've seen the lights from the other side, from the south side, going north to south too. They've seen it going both
really,
directions.
Both ways? Both wow. We actually, not too far from there, I'll have to talk to my Miami town friends because he's kind of in your neck of the woods, but there was a road that they claim that a boy got hit. He was riding his bicycle, and that he got hit when he was out there at night, and he had a headlight on it, and he got hit and he died. And they said that if you parked your car, flashed your lights three times, that you would see this little bicycle come towards you with a little light on it. But that, wait for it, that if you didn't turn your car back on and he got even with your car, that you would die in 7 days. Yeah, the ring had just come out. So we weren't calling over ourselves to investigate it, but then we were like, well, let's try it. So this goes back, you know, a few years. I was in the passenger seat. Rick was actually driving, and there were two girls in the back seat. So we parked, flashed the light three times, and then we're sitting there, and the girls are looking out
the back window, you know, make sure something doesn't come around and plow into us. We're sitting there with all the lights off, and lo and behold, this little light comes down there. So at which point the girls start screaming, start the car, and Rick is looking at me like, do I start the car? And I'm like, no, let's just see. And it got all the way up and then past us. It was like an old guy on a moped. And he's just staring at us as we go by. Now the really twisted thing about that, that's not luck. I don't want it to be luck. I want to think that there's like two senior citizens that live on that road, and he's just had his little TV dinner, and he's nodded off, and she comes over, and she's like, get up, Harold. Go on, go get him. Go scare him. You know, he gets out of the little moped, and he goes down there, and he scares him. So I want to believe that's true. I don't know if it is, but the Haydenville Tunnel. This is in Haydenville, Ohio. It is open to the public. I can't caution you enough. If you want to visit it, be very, very careful. I can't stress this enough because you'll find out in a second, not because of the ghosts, but because what you're looking at is the only way in and out of the Haydenville Tunnel. There are two stories as to why the Haydenville Tunnel is haunted. This was an old, almost a kind of a mining type tunnel. Haydenville was basically a brick manufacturing town. It sprang up to manufacture bricks. This tunnel was used to basically pull clay out of the mines and bring it back to the factory. The first version as to why the tunnel is haunted is that when they were digging the tunnel, they dug underneath a cemetery, which is true. Further, that they didn't dig quite deep enough, and all the bodies fell through the roof down into the tunnel. That's not true. The second story, which there is truth to, is that they were at the far end of the tunnel, and several people lost their lives. Which is why I said this is the only way in and out. To get into the tunnel, you can't really see it here, but you walk back a few hundred feet and then you have to climb over a partial collapse before you drop into the tunnel, and then you're walking for hundreds of yards. It is full of standing water and all sorts of things. So again, if you want to go, be very, very careful. And you can't get cell phone reception out there either. So. But of course, it goes for high, we're all over it. We went into the tunnel, got all the way to the far end of the tunnel where the cave-in is, where it was supposed to be haunted. Not getting any readings, no weird video, pictures, nothing. We decided that we're going to leave, but then I wanted to just line everybody up right along where the cave-in is and kind of take like a twisted family photo. So I said, okay, I'm going to count to three, because I didn't want to blind people because we were pitch black. And I said, one, two, and then I heard Stephanie say, what's that noise? And Eric, who was standing next to her, said, I don't know, but I heard it too. Snapped it, and in that picture, everybody is looking at the camera except Stephanie, who is turned away and she's looking at the cave-in, and there's a little infamous ghostly orb thing. I have problems with orbs. But here comes the part that I can't stress enough. If you get a picture with an orb in it or something that you think is weird, especially if you have a digital camera, keep shooting. Because if you get one picture with something in it, it's one picture, it could be any number of things. But if you get, like what I'm gonna show you right now, which is a weird sequence of pictures with all sorts of twisted things going on, it almost builds your case. Not necessarily that there's a ghost there, but that there's something odd taking place. So what I did is after I looked down and saw that I had this little orb, I told them, why don't you guys go back? I'm just gonna hang out here for a while. They're used to me being weird like that. So they left me. So what I did was I stood there, put both hands on the camera, held my breath, and just kept taking pictures. Each time it was ready to take another one, I fired. So the very next picture that I got after everybody had left was this. Again, classic type of orb thing. There's a bottle right there. You've got reflective metal. You've got even bright areas right here. Again, I wasn't too impressed right then. I was like, okay, that's weird, but what's going on? Now in the next picture, next one after this, that's gone, and it's been replaced by this. This is the one that when people start to look at it, they see figures. Some people actually see a skull up in here. The very next picture, whatever this is now moving past me because it's only visible kind of on the one side. That's a reflection. The next picture and the next 12, I believe, which I won't bore you with, there's absolutely nothing there. So again, if you look at just the one, okay, that's interesting. But if you look at the sequence, especially that one, it's a little weird. And again, we've got blogs of these over in our
Booth, a question that a lot of people ask, which is a great question, is could that have been your breath? Which is a great question because we were basically underground. And yeah, it could have been, except I love taking pictures, especially with digital. We took over 200 pictures. This stuff is only visible in those two. And just as a reference, I just randomly took another one where you can see us kicking up little dust orbs, but you can see there's no, it was only visible in those two. Strange and spooky people. We've got my two favorite here. These are both very twisted stories. They're the last two, and then you get the bonus video where you just say at the end of it, you could have not talked at all, you could have just shown the video. But I want to end with my two favorite people. They are strange, they are spooky, and I love them all to death. The first is Eugene. At no point in either of these stories am I going to say, according to legend. These are all twisted and weird, just fine the way they are. In 1929, the body of an unidentified man was found lying in the road in Sabina, Ohio. He lacked identification, and they couldn't even determine the cause of death. So for that reason, authorities sent him to the Littleton Funeral Home, asked that he be embalmed, pending notification of next of kin, and also to try to determine the cause of death. They never found out either. And as more and more time went by, the Littleton Funeral Home did something that I think might be a reason why they didn't really want to be interviewed for Weird Ohio in this story. Because what they did is they sat around and they started thinking and they said, you know, we kind of put out our own money to have this guy embalmed. We got to kind of find a way to get some money back for this. So what they did with Eugene, it was just a name, they just started calling him Eugene, but what they did with Eugene's embalmed body is they propped him up in the front window and started using him as a promotional tool.
Jeez.
But wait, there's more. More time passed, and then they discovered we should probably get awnings because Eugene's getting a little ripe. At which point they moved him back to what they now refer to as an old smokehouse behind the building. They would change his suit every year, but people could go in and still see a handiwork. Now more time passed, and the funeral home decided, well, I don't know, maybe we should bury this guy. I'd like to think it was out of the kindness of their heart, and I'm sure that that certainly played into it, but I'm also convinced something else came into play. I think the Littleton Funeral Home got a little annoyed being woken up in the middle of the night over and over again by the Columbus Police Department saying, will you come down here and get your body? Because it had become something of an Ohio State University prank to drive the 45 minutes down to Sabina, Ohio, steal the body of Eugene, drive it back up to campus, and leave it on park benches for people to find. You can find, I do have the names of the people, including the one who was expelled for doing that, and I want to interview them, just because I want to know what the ride back to Columbus was like. Did Eugene get to ride shotgun? Was he, you know, what did you guys talk about? What was going on there? So they did finally decide that they were going to bury Eugene. Now, if you remember the beginning of the story, they found Eugene in 1929. They buried Eugene in 1964. So you're talking about 35 years that he was embalmed and above ground. The interesting thing, this is his grave. They put his name in quotes because they don't know who he was. And I just love it. Found dead 1929, buried 1964. They also put concrete around it because they were afraid the students were still going to try to steal at least the tombstone. I love the fact that when we found it, it was on July 4th. They don't know who Eugene was, but yeah, he was a veteran, I guess. My opinion, veteran or not, he earned it. If war is hell, he was through it, even if he wasn't in the war. Mary Bach, she is not the strange and spooky person. Her husband is. Her husband was also not a very bright man. I'm thinking that you will all agree with this when I tell you that while he was alive, he would tell anybody that would listen, if Mary doesn't help me more with the chores, I'm going to kill her. Smart. Lo and behold, one day Mary disappeared. They went to her husband and said, what happened? I don't know. A couple of days later,
somebody cutting through the Bach family property, which is up around here at Bowling Green, saw something sticking up out of the dirt, gave it a little kick, and up popped three severed fingers. When presented with that lovely gift of three severed fingers, the husband immediately confessed that in a fit of rage, he had killed Mary with a corn knife. I didn't know what that was at the time. It didn't sound good. He was immediately arrested. After a very, very short trial, he was found guilty, and he was sentenced to be hanged for his crime. And Wood County set him off in style. He ended up being the last public execution in Wood County. They did it on the front steps of the courthouse, and they did it on the last day of the county fair. So they sent him off in style. Today, if you go to the Wood County Historical Society, which is in Bowling Green, you will see a little display cabinet which is filled with everything that is related to the trial of Mary Bach's killer. You'll get to see the hangman's noose that they put around his neck. There's actually the hood that they placed over him before they dropped him. There's the infamous corn knife. It's basically a straight blade about that long. So next time people make fun of us that there's nothing in Ohio but corn, they should know that we all have corn knives, so they better knock it off. There is the pipe that he smoked while awaiting execution. There is a ticket, because it was a public execution, but you still needed a ticket if you wanted to look at it. His Bible, all the things that related to there. And then last, but certainly not least, sitting in a little jar at the bottom is the star of the trial, because sitting in that little jar are the three pickled fingers of Mary Bach. Little sausages, as I like to say. This is probably the only museum, definitely in Ohio, if not the United States, where you can walk in, as we did, and say, I want to see the fingers. And the curator will go, all right, there, come here. The day that we were there, they were originally in formaldehyde. The formaldehyde has long since dried up. But the curator was very happy to tell us that a scientist had come out and determined that as long as they didn't take the lid off, the fingers would be fine. So, now that we've gone through all that twisted stuff, I am now going to show you the strangest and spookiest of all. Those of you with, you know, tender hearts, you might want to leave the room now because this is going to freak all of you out. It's not in Ohio, it is in Indiana. It is called the Blue Flash. Are you scared yet? The Blue Flash is a roller coaster. The Blue Flash is a homemade roller coaster that goes up over the top of a gentleman's barn. It is called the Blue Flash because the ride is over in a flash and he got a good deal on blue paint. He has absolutely no background in building roller coasters or things of this size. He built it because he was tired of driving 2 hours to the nearest amusement park. There's his barn that you go up and over the top of. But wait, there's more. To ride the Blue Flash, you must sit in a 1979 bucket seat on wheels. Bits and pieces of a John Deere tractor underneath it. Once you sit in it, they take a cloth lap belt, in name only. They tie it around your waist and they say, lean to the right. Whatever. But wait, there's more. Because after they put you in the 1979 bucket seat and they shove you onto this little chain system that pulls you up and over the top of the barn, after the chain disengages, it drops you down, gravity takes over, and as they say, the good Lord willing and the creek don't rise, you go through a 360 degree loop. I had actually found this, did not believe it was true. And I found that apparently to ride the Blue Flash, you only need to do two things. Find it, knock on his door, and if he's home, check off the first one. The second is that you have to be, ideally, about 150 pounds. So as we're driving out there, with me intending to ride the Blue Flash, because I knew that if I ever told this story and everybody said, did you ride it? No. You would help me with rocks and garbage. So the intent was that I was going to ride it. I was engaged at the time. Stephanie was with me.
As we're driving out there, the phone would ring occasionally. She would pick it up and she would say, I know. No, I told him, I know. No, he wants to ride it. Mother-in-law, trying to remind me about, you know, commitments to, you know, family and marriage and children and not to get on this thing. But I had to suffer for my art. So here for your enjoyment is a video of me riding the Blue Flash. I will show it twice because nobody ever just asked to see it once. Some things I will point out, don't worry if you can't keep track of all of them. Most importantly is my portly butt strapped into the 1979 bucket seat. Something else to notice, the family dog who lives beside the Blue Flash. Over here, when you will see these big, giant, round metal objects, which when I got done riding it, Stephanie said to me, go look behind the barn. And when I did and saw those, I said, what is that? And she goes, he's building a Ferris wheel. He was. He has since actually put in a second roller coaster, Blue Flash 2, but that's family oriented. You kind of just rock around there. But the best part, it's very hard to hear because this is just funny and everybody starts laughing, but right around this point, what he's gonna do is he's gonna shove me, gonna go up here, when I clear this, there's kind of a whiteout. It makes it look like I disappear into the heavens. If you listen close, you will hear Stephanie's giggling turn to extremely nervous laughter. I've never run it off of this projector, so if it stops, we'll reset it. But he just told me to lean to the right. My favorite part is that if you look close when I'm in the top of the loop, gravity pauses me for a moment. You decide, does this portly guy get to continue on his ride? And thankfully it does, but you'll see me kind of do one and then drop back down around it.
Lean to the right.
The reason he told me that is because it basically drops you into a 45 degree angle right off the top.
The thing, just to kind of wrap everything back up, loved about the whole thing with the Blue Flash, and I think that just kind of sums up where I was going with the whole idea of just like awe and wonder that takes place, is I love telling that story, not only because it's a great video, but to me, that represents true love. Because if you notice, for me to ride it, he had to shove me up on there. Gentleman lives alone. Well, no, he lives with his wife. They live together. She doesn't ride it. She has no interest in riding it. It's his toy. But that's true love. Because that, to me, is that awe and wonder that takes place. Honey, you want to go to a movie? Do you want to, like, you know, go rent a movie or go get dinner? Nah, can you push me on my roller coaster? All right, honey. That, to me, is true love. On top of that, you get the true love aspect where I asked him, okay, when you were building this, you know, how did you figure out how high you had to get so that gravity would put you through the loop? And he said, the barn looked high. So I said, okay, so you just randomly picked the barn when, you know, but how did you connect everything and just hope that it worked? And he said, no, I didn't want to do that. So I built the loop and then I tested it before I connected everything. I said, did you put sandbags or something on it? No, I wrote it. So I said, so you went up through the loop and then like launched yourself into the yard? Uh-huh. And I looked at the wife and said, so did you dial 9-1 and keep your finger open? And she was like, no, no, I knew he was okay doing what he was doing. That to me brings together the whole idea of like awe and wonder, you know, and true love and all that great stuff. So I know there's somebody coming after me. If you've got questions, I will be lurking around in the darkness, but thanks for spending some time in my life.